Okay, here we are back, hour number two already. And I will say that without any question, the number of people dying in this country or being mortally or gravely injured by this deployed biological weapon, there's nothing experimental about it. Don't let anyone kid you. And if you hear the word experimental used, please straighten these people out. Nothing experimental about this at all. It's huge. And it is all being covered up by the mainstream media. My best guess is, and I don't know how right I am, but I would bet money, if I had any extra, that there are at least 10 to 12 million dead in this country already. And that's no joke. And I think the Deagle projections are going to come in essentially correct. I think they knew what they were doing when they put them together. And that was William Deagle, the former Undersecretary of the Air Force under the Clinton administration. Both Clintons. I think he knew what he was doing. This has all been planned, all been laid out, and it's all been rolled out. And now, I'll bet in some hospitals, maybe 50% of the people that go in the front door end up going out the back. I think it's that bad. We're going to talk to a gentleman this first hour tonight, Erica and I, who has some stories to tell us, so we will do that. Erica, welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. Good to be back.
How you been, kid?
Hanging in.
That's what we do every day.
Yeah.
Hang in there. And the site that we won't name, but there's a new site that we were watching and Erica's tracking, and we were reading some of the human reports from it last time, is maybe the worst site yet in terms of people reporting dead people. I had one gentleman who was put in touch with me. He reported at first that seven of his close friends had developed cancer after the shots. And then when I talked to him, he says nine. And his wife took the shot and has severe bladder cancer. And he will come on at some point, but he's taking care of her now. And she's been in the hospital, and that's just one story. You get the impression after reading these public social media posts that this is an avalanche. It's a tsunami, and yet no one's talking much about it. Isn't it amazing how people have more or less accepted this as kind of a way of life now? He died? Oh, that's really too bad. If you lose a family member, it's something you never get over. But, I mean, this is not going to go away, dear friends. Understand that. People are not getting better. They're getting worse. And no pine needle tea is going to turn this around. Oh, it may help you detoxify from something or another, but no, there's no way to turn this around. This thing is so diabolically multifaceted that I would defy anyone to really sit down and do a better job than Erica has, and we've tried to do, explaining that to you. This thing has so many ways, so many anti-life components in it. It's a fright. It really is.
Yeah, I agree. And even if these injections stopped right now, there's still this ripple effect that we'd be dealing with. You know, something's been set in motion here that it would take some effort to get it under control.
A lot of effort. I don't know. I really don't know how this is going to roll out, but you make a very good point. Keep talking for a minute here. I got to find something.
Yeah, so you know, we're still dealing with the virus that is now, you know, mutating into something quite different than the original thing that came out of Wuhan, and that's thanks to these injections that were billed as vaccines, which are not vaccines. They're protein expression vectors, and they're making people produce a protein to a virus that's no longer in circulation. So they generate copious amounts of antibodies that now are not capable of neutralizing the mutating strains. And so So they serve the purpose of, rather than being protective, neutralizing antibodies, they're infection-enhancing antibodies. So they've built in this aspect of it where you can never get ahead of it now. You'll never have immunity as long as you have these antibodies to strains that are no longer in circulation, and this thing is under pressure to mutate to escape whatever's trying to kill it. And we're fast approaching what they call a truly stealth-adapted virus, where you can be exposed and you'll have no symptoms whatsoever. It'll just take up residence and invariably cause some sort of dysfunction, probably neurological, because it seems to have an affinity for nerve tissue. And like herpes viruses, you really won't know it's there until you have some sort of neurological disorder. And that's already happened. I've read a few cases of that with this Omicron variant, which is in some cases considered a partial stealth-adapted version. The person, I forget what their symptoms were, if they had a seizure or just partial paralysis. But they were tested, and it was found that they had IgM antibodies, which would indicate a recent exposure to this virus, and they never recalled being sick. No symptoms. So that's the direction we're headed. And then we have monkeypox on top of it, and the avian flu thing is still out there, which could potentially be a disaster if enough people start taking the standard flu shots, which will not be...
Let's just be forthright about this. We do not recommend the COVID-flu combination. We do not recommend the COVID-monkeypox-vax combination. We never recommend COVID-vax under any circumstance because it's not a vax. And we don't know what the hell the others are. We're told now that the flu vax is a quad. Okay, great. That means four different strains have been selected to be the ones that they expect to show up this year. Are they going to show up? Nobody knows until the season is well underway. They could miss on all four. The flu vax is always a dice roll. Now, the monkeypox vax, they just came out with this a few days ago, Little Rochelle, and they announced that they're going to combine it with the COVID, Pfizer and or Moderna, who knows, the COVID vax, which is not a vax. It's a death weapon, okay? You get the idea. And now that they no longer have to go through trials, as we've made clear to you, they, the big pharma giants, the mass executioners of humanity, can put anything they want in a syringe via a vial and inject it into people, calling it damn near whatever they want. We do know that Big Al Bourla and Pfizer made nearly $28 billion in the second quarter of this year alone. $28 billion just in the second quarter injecting people with the kill shots, which is what they are. They're kill shots. Sooner or later, and they're fused. Not everyone reacts the same way. There's so many different tentacles of death in this this incredible compilation of anti-life, which they're calling a vaccine, that people will live longer than others. Some might take a couple years, 3 years. Some might take a couple hours. Some might take a few minutes. We've seen that too. So it does things to people. And I think that what I proposed is something that really needs to be looked at closer. The autonomic nervous system. And if you don't know what that is, look it up. Autonomic. The autonomic nervous system, the bioelectrical smart brain that runs our bodies, may be being interfered with as well, i.e. shutting down the heart. Like switch thrown, goodbye. We don't know. What we've been able to assemble for all of you, and Eric has done incredibly heroic work, is the best estimate of the dimensions of this death weapon that I think you can find anywhere. And it's very gratifying, a little frustrating, to be frank, when we see our work pop up elsewhere, but we're very happy that it's getting spread around. That's the critical part. To give the few out there who want to know a chance to know. But make no mistake about it, they are listening to this program. very carefully to see we're their canary. Okay, if we had a canary, we'd be it. They're watching us to see what we know in the coal mine, and I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, we're trying anyway.
We are trying.
Give you a clue.
That was my line, wasn't it?
And I'm in full agreement. Yes, yes.
All right, I'm just teasing you. Okay, our special guest this hour is with us now. His name is John. We'll leave it at that. And it's spelled without an H, so we'll narrow it down a little bit. Ha ha. J-O-N. Anyhow, John is with us, and John is a remarkable individual who has some extraordinary stories to tell, to share with us about his experiences with these big death factories called hospitals. Hello, John. Thank you very much for being here. Sorry for the slight delay. Glad we got you on.
Good evening, Jeff.
And Erica is here. Say hello to Erica.
Hey, Erica. Thank you. I'm glad
Hi, John.
You're here. You can help me navigate the complexities of medical stuff that is over my head.
Well, it's over a lot of our heads. It is. It's not an easy thing to master. So we try and make it as user-friendly as possible. So thanks.
Well, there's some truth in this because the big doctor, internal medicine doctor at Salt Lake City University Medical Center, quite a complex. His response at the end was rather interesting in that...
Well, don't tell us now. Wait, well, let's build up to that.
He didn't know
the cause. Yeah, right. This is a great story in terms of its dynamics and really presenting what we're talking about here in a very vivid manner. So tell us the story, John, that your primary story that you want to share.
Well, I had neighbors when I was living and working in Nevada and working in the mines, and we're all connected to the mines in one degree or another, and James is working in the mines up there directly with the mines. We were contractors, many of us, but we became close friends. And I left and moved to Arizona 2 years ago, just after this scamdemic took off. And I pleaded with everybody I knew about don't take the vaccine, because I suspected, maybe years of listening to Jeff Rentz, that maybe that this was not going to be a very good thing. I don't know what it was. I don't know what COVID is. I don't know all this thing. Is it a bioweapon or is it this or is it that? But whatever the case was, I knew don't take it. And then I discovered that my friends did. My own children did against my advice. And I became concerned and did more research of VAERS database. What are the adverse reactions? And I got a call because we stay in connection. I call them several times a week, and they call me several times a week, and we're in touch. And mm-hmm. Larise called me because her husband is in the mine and can't communicate by phone. Mm-hmm. Right. So she calls me to tell me she's suffering chills, massive chills.
Oh, if I might, John, if I might. You're talking about Nevada mines. So this guy was actually way down underground, and he couldn't talk to her.
Well, anytime you're in the mines, cell phones uh-huh. are not to be touched unless you're on break. And
interesting.
So you're operating heavy machinery and big machinery,
yeah.
Water trucks and dozers and all this stuff. You cannot. You know, you can't use a phone.
This
so
is a big.
This
is a hell of a big hole in the ground you're talking about.
Yes, there's underground parts of the mine too. Several underground.
Okay.
But, so she calls me with the chills. I told her just take aspirin. Don't take ibuprofen. Just take mm-hmm. aspirin, and call me later. Well, I never got heard from her. And so I got desperate late at night, and James finally returned the call to tell me that she had been taken to the emergency room, and she's in the intensive care unit. And
now, was she,
my heart sank.
John, excuse me again, was she vaxxed, shot up?
Not just once, but twice with Moderna.
Okay, I just want to get that on the table. And how about her husband?
4 months. 4 months is best I can figure out. I don't have the dates.
Okay.
But about 4 or 5 months after the second dose, mm-hmm. she suffered this chills mm-hmm. and was diagnosed. I can say this now, getting her medical records, that mm-hmm. she was diagnosed with both suffering delirium. They did a blood test, made sure she wasn't on drugs. And then they said sepsis, septic shock, and the doctor report from that episode at the Elko Hospital also tested her for COVID. And she tested positive, and they gave her remdesivir. I did not know that
God.
When James called me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say this now because the doctors were trying to stabilize her bodily fluids. That's what they said. And so the
May I ask you to pause, John, again? I'm sorry. But
yes.
Erica, here's another remdesivir horror story to stabilize her body fluids? What are these people thinking?
They're just giving you any old answer to keep you quiet.
Amen.
Well, that was in the report, just these short sentences, which I thought was interesting because it wasn't very in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
But they did identify her as suffering delirium because I don't want to embarrass her, but she was doing embarrassing things, you know, just acting. I don't know what delirium is, but it sounds like they
you
act
mean,
out of
mean
their...
acting out like a...
Standing in the hospital bed, ripping her clothes off.
Okay.
Yeah, that's impulse control disorder.
Yeah.
So,
what's the other word for when
this.
You do it verbally? I asked you that
Tourette's.
The other day. Tourette's syndrome. Yeah, but this is different. So
right.
she was just acting out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, the Veris database. Show reports about these events, delirium.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
In her case, the septic shock, I found out in my quick medical study after getting the reports that there's four types, and she had the one that affected the brain, the nervous system. And the Veris database proves that, where typically, the Veris database contains people who have been vaxxed, and then they get the encephalitis or the what they diagnose as encephalitis without a cause. Because all the things that the doctors are going, he's suffering from encephalitis or acute encephalopathy, but there's nothing to say in our other tests to prove what caused it. And so they concluded... doctors in, I think this was Qatar, claiming that it had to be the vaccine because there's no other reason for a 31-year-old man to come down with this, and we can't find any other reason. And curious enough, when I was in the hospital, I was kind of teasing a woman in a wheelchair. I don't know, it sounds funny, but I thought she had hurt her knee skiing in Utah during the winter. And
oh, it's always fun to tease people in wheelchairs. Come on, John.
Well, I said, you must have had a ski accident. She goes, no, I'm an epileptic. I cut my knee during my fit, and it got infected, and I got septic shock.
Oh, wow.
She told me that as I'm going up and down trying to get Larissa's medical records.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, feeding her, too, because no one seemed to be feeding her. So James and I made a record. We're going to feed this girl, and we're going to get her out of here.
Wait a minute. No, nobody seemed to be feeding her in the hospital? Really?
Yeah, they come in with these beautiful trays of food. So I think I'm going to go to the hospital tonight and get dinner. But anyway, they bring these beautiful trays of food, but no one was feeding her. Her tray, the morning breakfast tray, was untouched.
Just sat there.
So they couldn't spare a
staffer to go in there and help her eat. Wow.
You had to feed her because, at least mm-hmm. I did. I started feeding her. I washed her face. James, we're going to have to feed her just like a toddler. And she did. And then about the third bite of that cold soup, she shut her lips. And then I laughed. And she goes, mm-mm. And I just giggled because I said, no more? Mm-mm. And so the next time I brought her warm food, she ate more. She ate half the cup. Mm-hmm.
And I remember we're talking about a youngish woman, double dosed with the Moderna kill shot. Okay,
and she's in her fifties.
Fifties, young enough.
She's in her fifties.
She's. I know some 50-year-old women, a few. There's also an issue here. We're going to go to a different hospital, so let's move along with that. You got nowhere at Elko. All right.
Her second day at Elko was she's deteriorating, and James said they're lifelighting her. I immediately booked a flight to Salt Lake City because that's the only hospital that they could get room in, because this is in January 31st of this year, and the hospitals all over the country are jammed with patients.
Yeah.
The places are full.
Jammed with shedding patients, we might add.
And Reno was full, so they got her a life flight to Salt Lake City, and I booked a plane, and I was there at 9:30 in the morning. And curious, I said to her, James, Larissa's husband, don't pick me up at the airport. I'll get an Uber. And the Uber guy, as I'm telling him I'm going to the hospital and what I'm going there for, he tells me he had an adverse reaction, heart problems from the vaccine.
Would you mind disclosing your vax status just for the heck of it here?
Well, I've always been somewhat skeptical of modern, you know, you're ill, take a pill. And so listening to you for how many years off and on, you know, I'm skeptical anyway about progress that isn't, or government programs that
Rockefeller
just take off.
Medicine.
So I was
administered through
needles.
Yeah,
so I was extremely skeptical from day one when they were trying to scare the American people and we're all going to die of some disease. And I knew that was from the devil. I knew that was wrong. So I tried encouraging everybody not to take the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter did. My son did. My daughter's had two deep vein thromboses after her Moderna vaccine. So they're believers now, I think. But in this particular case, when they life-flighted her, I got there. And as James met me in the lobby to take her to his wife, he's telling me that, and he's choking up because he said, she doesn't know who I am. Mm. And I said, what? And I got scared, even worse. And then he's telling me she's also, her legs are flailing back and forth with her, and her arm, her left arm is, not her right arm for some reason, but her arm and two legs are flailing once in a while. So as I'm putting the garb on that we had to wear protocol, every time I entered the room, I had to put a new dress on or whatever and a mask on.
Right. Gown.
I'm praying, God, don't let me break down in front of her. I open the door and I'm still begging God. And I said, I pulled my mask off so she could see me. And I said, hi, Larissa, it's John. And she waved and said, hi, John. She's leaning against the bed on her side. And as I approach her, I kissed her forehead. I said, I'm here. We're going to take you home. We're going to make you better. She flopped on her back. Her legs started going every direction. And she stared with these two big quarter-size eyeballs, just stared, blank stare at the ceiling. And I just wondered, oh, my God, what's happened to her? And I don't have proof. I don't have proof what had happened to her. I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Except
Erica,
they claim this COVID.
And
she.
Go ahead. Finish up, John.
So my thought was, because I'm a dummy, did she have a stroke? That's all I thought of.
Well, this spike protein, and she had a double dose of it, has a real affinity for the neurology of the human body. It loves to get into the nervous system. And that's probably what you were seeing.
It.
Yeah. And so,
yes.
I mean, this is often overlooked, but it's one of the many things that Erica has put together, that this hideous, most deadly thing, in Dr. Chetty's words, that mankind has ever created, and I'm not going to argue that, it loves neurology, it loves to mess up things, it loves to get into the brain with causing prion diseases. It's got so many things. It's just, it's overwhelming. A comment, Erica?
You know, it could also be what's called an anti-NMDA receptor. It's an autoimmune condition where, you know, you get encephalitis from it.
Yes.
But the immune system is attacking these receptors in the brain and causing symptoms like that.
In fact, a few years ago.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say
there was a very good movie made. It's nonfiction. It was chronicled this young woman's saga. Who she had a viral illness and got over it, but then several weeks later began to experience episodes of psychosis, really, and went into a tailspin, and it looked like she was going crazy, and eventually ended up hospitalized in almost kind of a catatonic state. And they had a very astute doctor that figured out it was an autoimmune reaction to likely the various viral fragments of the virus she had had several weeks earlier, and they were able to treat her, and she recovered fully. So I know that has been documented with this virus, the SARS-CoV-2, and or the exposure to the spike protein, that the autoimmune aspect of it is there too. But the name of that movie was Brain on Fire. If anyone wants to watch it, it was fairly well done.
That's interesting, because some of these VAERS reports mention exactly what you said about the cytokine storms. I don't know how that word is pronounced.
Cytokine.
Cytokine. Yeah, cytokine storm. That's what these doctors in Qatar and other and all over the place suggest, that the vaccine causes this autoimmune response.
There may be more to it than that, though. There may be a neurological aspect that mimics it. I don't know. I'm not a neurosurgeon, but
Whatever the case is, you know, like, well, the story gets better because I'm trying to get the medical records, and I suspect, but I don't go and approach the nurses who are doing the best they can do, or any doctor. I'm not there to, you know, campaign against vaccines and Fauci and not all that business. I'm going to be very nice to him because I want this woman to walk out of here. And so I am just asking, but I did mention one thing to the nurses' stations. It's interesting. No one nurses go into the rooms. Must be a COVID thing. They all monitor them through Zoom cameras.
Oh, wow.
And so on, and watching the monitor that the only thing that Larice had on her was a clip checking her blood pressure, her pulse, and her oxygen level. And I saw that her oxygen level was good, so I'm thinking, well, she doesn't suffer any flu, influenza, pneumonia, COVID, or anything else. Her lungs are clearer than mine. So what's going on here? Mm. And so that day, I didn't see a doctor that day, and for whatever reason, because I was there maybe after he had been there. And so it was the following day, as we're feeding her, I'm wrestling to get the records and getting permission, because I brought James down to the records department. They said the husband can't have them either. He's got to fill out the forms, and I just shook my head and didn't argue, didn't fight. I said, I'm going to get them somehow. So James and I were kind of going back and forth with the food and feeding her as much as we could get in her. And meanwhile, on day two, the doctor at 9 in the morning, and I was down arguing about or trying to get paperwork. And just as I came up there, he's leaving the room. And so I asked the doctor on day two, well, what happened to Larice? What happened to her? And he began with the story by saying, well, because of COVID. And I said, excuse me, sir, but her lungs are clearer than mine. You can see it in there. Her oxygen's at 90, 91, and that's without the oxygen in her nose. And she doesn't have sniffles or a cold or a fever or anything.
Do you know how much remdesivir they gave her, John? How much remdesivir did she receive? All right. Well, thank God it wasn't more, because her lungs could be full of fluid. She could be kidney failure, all kinds of things. She got lucky.
But you're right, and yet her oxygen was pretty stable.
Yeah.
Because I have no idea what mine is sitting right here talking to you. But the point is, it was a green screen, and I go, that's good. And so when I asked the doctor about that, he said he didn't argue with me about the COVID. He dropped it. He then told me, well, she suffered a neurological event, and we don't know why. And I said, the vaccine. And he bowed his head, turned around, and walked away. And right in front of all the nurses and all the nurse stations, there must have been maybe 7 nurse stations, we were all right there. And he didn't argue with me. The nurses didn't say anything about the remdesivir request I made. Don't give it to her. And the doctor didn't say anything didn't get in a fight with me about the vaccine. He just bowed his head and walked away. I assumed by all their reactions that they know what you and I know.
No
doubt. The vaccine harmed her. And quite frankly, can you imagine being a doctor, Erica, and you've got these patients coming in, and what are you going to do?
I know.
You don't know. You know, this guy, I saw that they didn't have any IVs in her, so I'm thinking, well, what's wrong with her?
And right.
Before I left town, I asked everybody to pray, because nothing scared me more than to know that a dear friend is being given remdesivir when I know it's a death nail. It's a kidney killer.
Yeah.
So, and how did I know that? Because like I said, the VAERS database was a place you could go to find out where your loved ones who took the shot may get something, may get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know what that might be. And it was, of course, it's unbelievable. And so when I got no argument from the doctors and nurses, and she didn't even protest about my, you know, they don't know if I'm a doctor or a friend or a bum off the street. Of course, I try to look proper and well-dressed, so they must have thought I was somebody, but they never
Good
argued
job.
With me.
Yeah, interesting.
It must have been
your attitude, your demeanor. They sense that, and it's not everybody has name tags.
I prayed to God for miracles here. And I don't want to fight anybody. I'm not here as a crusader. I'm just here to get my friend home.
Right.
And what a miracle, because all the while I'm struggling to get this paperwork, a social worker showed up after the doctor and said, or had heard, that I might need help. And that was to get her medical records, access to it, because I wanted to know what happened to her. I didn't know they gave her remdesivir until I got the medical records.
Oh,
but
wow.
This is the interesting part. Everybody has to get someone who can get a medical directive for them. So if you're married, you better have one for your spouse, and your spouse better have one for you.
It's called an advocate.
You
got to have a human being in there advocating for you somehow. If you give them a piece of paper, they'll file it. Yeah.
Yes, and you must have that record. And in the state of Utah, I looked it up on my laptop to, you know, Google, what do I need to do? And I discovered, this is amazing, I got Larice with a social worker. I said, because Larice couldn't finish her name. She typed L, that's her signature, and then she stopped and said, I don't know. I said, well, your last name starts with what? and she wrote her an M, and she stopped. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I quickly thought, well, you know what? Those are initials. You got to initial a bunch of boxes on this thing. That's good enough. That's going to be your signature. And the social worker was helping me, which I was surprised. I thought he'd be a gatekeeper. And he was going to go, yeah, I think you can get this done, John. That signature is good enough. So now
nice
I'm prepared
story.
to go get the notary. And it turns out the hospital is filled with notaries. They had 12 people on staff to do it.
Jeez.
Because the whole medical system is breaking down, and
right.
people are demanding. The
yeah.
first night I'm walking to the room with James after eating dinner, and we got to get kicked out because visitors' hours are about over, and there was 4 security guards or cops or both in a man's room on that floor, in a room, and I wondered, what's going on there? Everybody with guns, what's going on? And there was an old man standing over his wife. I don't know what they were arguing over. Remdesivir? I have no idea.
Well, you see,
so,
and all of you listening see how easy it is to kill somebody in a hospital. She could have been dead easily. And I
don't know
that,
how she survived the lifelight.
I don't either.
It was a miracle of God. And
we'll take it. Yeah.
I'm trying to get, before we leave, because they're talking about releasing her on day 3 tomorrow, you know, that next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to get these records. I'm not leaving here without these records. And I went down, got all my things in order. I got the witness. That'll be me. James will be the director and get the mm-hmm. records and all this stuff. I got all of it lined up. And the notary said, do you have your license? I go, yes. Does James have his license? Yes. You better find out if Florice does. So I go back up to the floor and ask James, where's her driver's license? And it was at home. And I went,
uh-oh.
Oh, my. Now what am I going to do? And as I got down to the administrator's office again, one more time, it's as if God put it in my mind, well, wait a minute. She was admitted to this hospital, ma'am, without a license. And she was treated in this hospital without a ID or driver's license. And I'm not going to let you discharge her without a license. And you know what? You can't bill her. And the woman goes, hold on, let me make a phone call. She made the phone call, and I got up. I don't want to hear it. I can't hear it. This is the glass. You know, there's always the glass now in between everybody. And I'm just kind of pacing in this little space and leaning up against the wall. And she goes, Mr. Wood, you can have the medical records and directives. We'll sign the paper.
Nice.
And I go, boom.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it. God put my mind to tell him, if you won't give me medical records, you ain't getting any money.
Good.
Well, see, every COVID fatality, I think I can round it off safely, is minimum $100,000 profit for each hospital.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just a gruesome, big, ghoulish enterprise. The taxpayer money comes from
the federal government.
DHS,
has a
CDC,
pool of money.
I don't know. No, it just comes from one of the government agencies. I don't know who has responsibility about it. It's tax money. There is no money. It's all just printed up anyway.
Well, it's funny money. Yeah, printed out of thin air.
So here's the deal.
Amazing,
go ahead. Tell us how she got out. Now, this woman could have and should have been dead by this time, I would say.
Well, obviously, the words from the hospital in Elko, who did everything they could, they diagnosed her with this, you know, this brain issue and having septic shock.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, they didn't want to claim that. They'd never claim remdesivir is what caused her to be in a bodily fluids, and they were losing her. That was their words. We're losing her, and that's why they wanted to find her. And they have, they know Larice because of her medical back surgeries and all this. They knew her, and that was a godsend because I think they cared about her. I know they did.
Well, you know, and sometimes so, care is misdirected and misguided because they don't know what the hell they're doing. Anybody with a brain would never inject somebody with remdesivir or put it in an IV bag. They just wouldn't do it. It doesn't work. It's useless.
No, it didn't. And so, the miracle of God, she got sent to Salt Lake City. And like I said, when I got there, they're not giving her, you know, you don't have an IV in her. I don't know what that means. I'm not a doctor, but
she's laying in bed with untouched food.
Finger.
Uh-huh. Oh, jeez.
And her, yeah, and her big toe, and she's dirty. She's, you know, she's been in the hospital now for, what, 4 or 5 days at that point, and I'm just thinking, James, you're going to wash her. You got to get, we're going to wash her. She wouldn't go in the shower because of this mental issue she might have had. I don't know what that was, but she wouldn't do it. So when she got discharged and I got the medical records, I could quickly found all this stuff out, and I knew it was a vaccine reaction.
Well,
a lot
of
people don't
probably
like to hear that.
Worse than a reaction, it was a vaccine outcome, and she beat it somehow. Well, as you say, through the grace
of God,
and you and her husband working, she had two awesome people advocating for her, and without that, you got nothing. So, okay, let's wind this up. What happened? She gets out, you take her home, what happened? How does it work?
She just was getting better and better, and so apparently, you know, because I thought, how in God's name are you going to drive 4 hours, 4.5 hours back to Elko in a pickup truck? Is she going to make it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, without complications, but they did. She told me afterwards that apparently her husband couldn't get her in the shower. She still was afraid of it or something, but she eventually got in there because her hair was a mess and everything. But I knew she suffered a neurological event in her brain. She lost her memory, and I started testing her. And there are tests online. You can get people to start activating their brain. And that woman got so well that I don't know if, I think she's got 99% of her brain capabilities back, her memory and everything. You would never know talking to her that she was ever ill.
Well, let's hope she doesn't go for her booster, huh?
No, she's. I got a promise.
No more.
No more boosters.
No more shots.
And let's pray for all those people who've taken it.
Oh yeah. Well, I lost somebody in December, and remdesivir. They killed God knows how many people with remdesivir. Astonishing.
So what was the answer? To give them doxycycline like what they used to do when you had a bad flu, preventing pneumonia and influenza?
It's hard to know because she had two shots and they were the adenovirus vector type. I don't know what the protocols, what would you put on the table, Erica, for just general protocols for somebody in her position? What would you have recommended if you were advocating?
I'm guessing they had to give her some kind of a steroid, like methylprednisone or something. It sounds like she had, for sure, encephalitis. And so that would reduce the swelling in the brain and allow her to recover. But, you know, what was causing it? That's the question.
Yeah.
Was she having an autoimmune reaction? Was the spike protein in there causing issues? These lipid nanoparticles go in there and can cause issues.
Yes.
And it might have been something else.
Yeah, why the body attack itself and shut down?
Well, as well, these shots disrupt the immune system and they disrupt the microbiome, so you can have other viruses and bacteria that migrate into the brain, because one of the things the spike protein does is it punches holes, so to speak, in the blood-brain barrier, so all manner of things are now entering the brain.
Mm.
So it could have been that. But, you know, certainly these injections are so massively disruptive to the immune system in so many ways.
Yeah.
And, it's convenient for... Go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering. So all these people have been vaccinated, double-dosed, whatever. What can set it off?
Oh, it's like a long, slow slide or a faster slide, depending on the person, depending on their innate immune competence. There are a lot of factors. That's why this is such a difficult thing to deal with. It's not simple. It's
very complex.
Yeah,
the spike protein by itself is toxic. And now these people, the ones that have taken the mRNA or the adenovirus, J&J or AstraZeneca, Sputnik, they are producing, their cells are producing various amounts of a toxic, really toxic protein that can affect the nervous system, can affect the immune system, can affect the vascular system. So
and
take
we
your
think
journey.
That that, we think that that number,
mitigate
the number... The number of protein produced, what do we figure? What did you figure? 30 trillion at one point? Possible spike proteins or more?
Well, with the mRNA, it's,
yeah.
I forget, it was
13.1
billion times 100. 13.1 billion mRNA that have the potential of producing 100 spike proteins.
Each.
And that's just, speculation. Maybe more, maybe less.
All right. John, we have to wrap this up.
Is there anything to mitigate? Is there anything they can do to take something to get rid of these spike proteins? Crush them? Get rid of them?
The ivermectin is something that people have resorted to. The MMS or CDS is another thing people are using. I mean, there's a range of different things. It's hit or miss. The best thing to do is look at some of these support groups and see what's working for people. There's no official... I mean, the FLCC, Frontline Critical Care Doctors,
yes.
Dr. Pierre Corey, he now has a protocol for the vax injured. You could visit their website, and he's done on several videos now on how these people can... hopefully recover some of their health, their immune competence.
Some of their health. We don't guarantee anything here. We hope that they can indeed recover some of their health and maybe more of their health. We don't know. We just don't know. We're still, it's only 2 years now, right? Not even.
Something like
Not
that,
even.
Yeah.
True.
And,
yeah.
Do you think the flu season then would possibly instigate another wave of people getting violently sick?
If they mix it with the so-called COVID vaccine, you betcha. And what happened last year was that they hijacked the flu season and simply renamed flu cases COVID. That's what they did.
Correct.
Yeah, that was an umbrella term.
Yeah. So here.
Yes.
Bottom line, let me try and wrap this up real quick. For all of you out there, vaxxed and unvaxxed, the hospital is not your friend unless you are dying and you have absolutely no other hope. And then you have to have someone to advocate for you in there to make damn sure they don't slip remdesivir in like they did to my friend in Florida without his permission, and they killed him. He told him, no, no, no. And I finally made him get his chart, and he found it on the chart. And he called the doctor. He says, why did you do this? He says, oh, don't worry. I just gave you enough to save your life. He was dead the day after Christmas. So hospitals are to be avoided if humanly possible. Please. And don't go in there without an advocate who
you
knows
can't
something.
Can't go there without an advocate. That is a fact.
Yeah.
And you
Erica,
must pray.
Anything you want to add to this?
Yeah. You know what you're up against if you decide to go to one of these places. The corporate ones seem to be the worst in terms of perpetuating
yes.
these death protocols. You might stand a better chance at a smaller, quote, community hospital. Depends how much money you know, they're getting from the government to do this. If they're reliant on getting big payouts from the government to keep themselves going, then, you know, you can almost be assured they're going to follow the money.
All right, well, that's a story for you all. Someone who is double-vaxxed, who got very sick, possibly terminally ill, and somehow survived it. So hopefully that'll be something that might be instructive to all of you who care about this out there. And we'll get back to our last thing. As far as we can tell right now, between the vaxxed and the unvaxxed, the safest protocol that both parties can pursue is what, Erica?
Maintain some distance.
That's it. Stay away. No touchy, no kissy. Be smart and try not to be in the room, a little tiny room with no ventilation, because you're going to end up breathing things that are released into the atmosphere. It's just, this is the way it is. So, John, thank you very much for being here. You've got more to talk. We'll have you back on another day. But I'd like to talk about that brilliant scientist who developed and tested the MKUltra drugs for the CIA and apparently was killed by those very drugs. That's another story we want to hear at some point. So thank you, John, very much for sharing that.
Well, thank you, Erica, and thank you, Jeff. Thank you both for what you're doing.
Good luck moving forward.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, John. We'll talk. Okay, good night.
Hey, good night.
Well, there's a... It's nice to hear a happy outcome, at least temporarily happy. We don't know if she's, you know, free of it, but she's sure probably doing a lot of research about it, I would think. And there are things you can do to build what's left of your immune system and do your best. Okay, we will be back with another hour for you, all of you, wherever you are around this beleaguered planet, in just a few minutes. So hang on.